this is the sixth in a series. You come in on inning six of the ball game, but each inning is by itself. This is the sixth of a series of studies from in the beginning of the Bible. We started with Genesis 1, and now we've come up to chapter 5. And of all things, you've gotten into the wildest of all the innings, because it has all these numbers. I give it the title, The Human Family's Family Tree. And it's the genealogies. And it has all these genealogies, of which some of you already are shaking your heads, and rightly so. You know, Adam lived 130 years and begat Seth. And after he had begotten Seth, he lived 800 more years and begat sons and daughters. A virile old man, lived a long time. And all the years of Adam were 930 years, and he died. And then it goes on to Seth. And so you have 10 generations. On the chart here, and don't try to understand all of this chart here, I'll take a few things off of it so that it becomes even a little clearer to you. We're going to just take this chapter 5 from Adam all the way through Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, to Noah. If we had lots of time and I were here another week, which I can't be, then we get into chapter 11, and there you have, after the flood, the first child born is Arpaxad. So we have a genealogy from Shem, Arpaxad, Shelah, Eber, Peleg, Reu, Serug, Naara, Terah, to Abraham. But as you well know, in the book of Genesis itself, you go farther than Abraham. You go to Isaac, you go to Jacob, to Israel. So we have here in the book of Genesis the generations first in chapter 2, verse 4, of the heavens and the earth, when Lord. Then in this chapter, that we'll read in just a minute, chapter 5, verse 1, this is the book of the generations of Adam. Then in chapter 6, it will give us, this is, these are the generations of Noah. Then in chapter 10, of Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then you'll have, this is the generations of Terah, together with Abram, and this is the generation of Isaac, and finally it'll have, this is the generation of Jacob, or Israel, and their 12 sons, and that's the 12 tribes of Israel. So you see where the genealogy wants to go? And we're just taking the first part. It's something like the one we had last time, and you won't have to worry about that. This is for the sake of several of you that were here last time that gives us the genealogy in chapter 4. What we're interested in right now is this new one. Now, having said that, I guess I'll ask you this question. Isn't it true that when anybody reads this, the first question they ask is what? Did they really live that long? And you see that, isn't that?
Yes.
And the second one, how does this add up with our chronology of B.C. and A.D.? Isn't the world older than 4,000? And do we have to believe that the flood came in 2,348 B.C.? Those are two questions that people ask, isn't it? And we're going to try to answer those questions, if we may. You don't necessarily have to follow all my opinions, and I'll try to give variant opinions, even some that I disagree with. And then, I think we ought to, first of all, start off with what you have in the genealogy. This is the way the genealogy goes. And it repeats it 10 times, and it could be very monotonous. When so-and-so, ancestor A, was X years one old, he begat his successor B. And he lived, after he begat his successor B, Y years, so and so many years, and begat sons and daughters, virile old person, and then all his years were Z numbers, so-and-so, so many years, and then he died, isn't it? It repeats that 10 times. Now that would be very monotonous if that's all it did and gave us these numbers. But every once in a while we'll have some changes in these numbers. And when I read this, and I'm going to read it myself so that you don't have to pronounce all these terrible names. I'll read it just in, if you have an RSV, any text would be all right, but I'll have to read it in one version, the RSV. Try, after I'm finished, to tell me what is the variant from the various, from that one pattern that is repeated 10 times. And by the way, 10 is important because what? I've got 10 fingers and nothing is missing, and I count in on that. So they use the decimal system, you see that? This is where a computer would be a dual system, wouldn't it? And they go fast with microchips. But they quite have that. You have a sexagesimal system, and they followed the complete listing would be not 7 as we had in chapter 4, but 10. This is the book of the generation of Adam. When God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. Male and female created he them. He blessed them and named them man when they were created. When Adam had lived 130 years, he became the father of a son in his own likeness after his images and named him Seth. The days of Adam after he became the father of Seth were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. When Seth had lived 105 years, he became the father of Enosh. Seth lived after the birth of Enosh 807 years, and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. When Enosh had lived 90 years, he became the father of Kenan. Enosh lived after the birth of Kenan 815 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Enosh were 905 years and he died. When Kenan had lived 70 years, he became the father of Mahalalel. Kenan lived after the birth of Mahalalel 840 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Kenan were 910 years, and he died. When Mahalalel had lived 65 years, he became the father of Jared. And Mahalalel lived after the birth of Jared 830 years, and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. When Jared had lived 162 years, he became the father of Enoch. Jared lived after the birth of Enoch 800 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. When Enoch had lived 65 years, he became the father of Methuselah. When Enoch walked with God after the birth of Methuselah 300 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. When Methuselah had lived 187 years, he became the father of Lamech. Methuselah lived after the birth of Lamech 782 years, and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. You know, he's the one who lived the longest, 969. Not quite 1,000, though. When Lamech had lived 182 years, he became the father of a son, and he called his name Noah, saying, out of the ground which the Lord has cursed, this one will give us relief from our work and from all the toil of our hands. Lamech lived after the birth of Noah 595 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. After Noah was 500 years old, Noah became the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Period. Now, I rushed that a little too much. If I were a cantor in a synagogue, I would sing it out, and you would get it even a little nicer in a rhythm, in a pattern. Well, now, put you people into school again. I'm a teacher, even though I'm retired now. Where do you have variance from the normal pattern? The normal pattern is what? When so-and-so lived so many years, he begat his successor. And then he lived after begetting his successor so-and-so many more years, and begat sons and daughters. And then all his years were so-and-so, and then he died. Where is the difference in the pattern?
Like when Lamech was talking
about
Noah.
All right, Lamech, he talks about Noah. What does he say about Noah? So that's in chapter 5, verse, you're referring to verse 29, isn't it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. He says, you have an explanation of his name. And the name Noah means rest bringer. It's the same word that occurs in Isaiah 40. Some of you know this. Comfort, comfort ye my people. Nachamu, Nachamu, the same word that Menachem Begin has, the guy who's received comfort, that old square-toes guy, gives me the willies, used to be the premier of Israel. Jimmy Carter took care of him at Camp David. Don't you remember Menachem Begin? It's the same word, Noah. So it means rest-bringer. And why do you think this guy is called rest-bringer? Well, it mentions something here. He's going to bring us rest from what? The curse of the ground which the Lord had cursed. Isn't it all our labor? We've been having labor. Do you remember we had that in chapter 3? So most of you know that, even those who are not here in the Bible class, that because you have done this, cursed is the ground for your sake. Thorns and thistles it'll bring forth. You'll have more thorns and thistles than grain. And you'll work all your life in the sweat of your brow to get your food, and then you'll die, and so forth. So what do you think this means? That Noah is going to be the rest bringer. It will give us comfort. This same will give us comfort is the way he translates it here. What is Noah going to do that's great and important?
He's going to build an ark, for one thing.
Yes. And survive
the flood.
And that's important. That's the way most people say. Some people even say Martin Luther would say so. And he's a nice guy, but I don't agree with him on this one. He thought that this would be the promised Savior. You remember the one that was born of the woman? Of which Eve, he took it that way too, that when Eve brought forth Cain, she first thought, Ich habe den Mann, den Herrn, that's the way it is in the German Bible, I've got the man, the Lord, he's the promised Savior, he's going to bring salvation. And so they were waiting for him, you see that? They were mistaken, Cain didn't prove to be the Savior, Noah didn't either, but he did survive the flood. Do you know that there's another naughty explanation which your teacher espouses? And that is in chapter 9, it says, Noah planted a vineyard and drank of his wine and became inebriated. Please don't throw me out. But we had all the wonderful firsts and achievements of agriculture. Cain was first tiller of the ground. Enoch built a city. Jabel was the father of those that dwelt in tents and had cattle. Jabel was the father of those that had music, the harp, and the lyre. Tubal Cain, those that were artificers in brass and iron. And I think, although I'm not going to excommunicate you if you don't agree with me, that maybe this refers to the fact that when you've got a lot of labor, this invention of nice wine, and they did not drink water. To call somebody a real deadbeat, you call him a water drinker in those days. First of all, the water wasn't that good. It was very often polluted and so forth. And secondly, wine was the staff of life, you know, bread and wine. You still have that in the Eucharist. That was their way of doing it, you see. And so it could refer to that. Now, I don't know whether you're going to buy that. You don't have to. You don't even have to make up your mind. I don't have any examinations here. And even if I had an examination with my students, I wouldn't force them to take my opinions on disputed. So you have alternatives here. Do you see that? But you're absolutely right that here is a change in the pattern. You see that? Somehow this guy is important, isn't it? Either because he survives the flood, or maybe mistakenly Lamech thought that he was going to be the promised one that would crush the head of the serpent. Or it could be, and that's a very minimal thing, is that he's going to be the inventor of something that does help people and refresh them. I don't know whether we have any teetotalers here, but if my friends come in the afternoon and visit me, I simply say, well, would you like to have a little wine? If they don't like that, they can have Pepsi or whatever they want, or coffee. But wine, then the conversation goes in a little... And so this is not, you know, our problem of chronic alcoholism or misuse of that, but this is just one of the great inventions of humankind. Taking the grapes and letting them ferment and then having wine, which is a nice thing. Well, okay, that's one variation in the pattern. What's another variation? Most of you must have seen that, even though I read and got breathless here.
In
Enoch, what's the...
Enoch walked with God.
Yes, he walked with God. And not only walked with God, but what else?
God took him.
God took him? And does it say, and he died?
He was not.
He was not, he disappeared. Now we can read too many things, and some people say, he walked with God so much that he knew all the secrets of God, and so God raptured him to take him away. And then some people were waiting, you know, before the final day, the judgment day, that Enoch would come. Just like, you remember Elijah was taken to heaven with the fiery horses and angel horses and angel chariot. And then the prophet Malachi said that before the great and terrible day of the Lord, the final day of coming of the Messiah and all the climax of the history, what would happen? Elijah would come. I will send my messenger before my face. And people thought that was John the Baptist, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And then you have that in the New Testament. Well, this is not Elijah, this is Enoch. I wouldn't quite say that God gave him special secrets and or that he was up in heaven and would come back and tell us. There are some books that didn't get into our Bible called the Book of Enoch, and you can study them. They're what we call apocryphal books, and they were excluded by the rabbis. The rabbis wouldn't take anything before Moses, and so they left this out. And they wouldn't take anything after Ezra, because they had too many kooky books the way it was. And so they said that this is the only books that we'll leave in the Old Testament. So there were such books, do you see that, from later times. And they speculated a lot about what would happen. This, I think we have to be very careful. You can read too many things in here. I can imagine that the New Age people read a lot into this if they study the Bible. So it depends upon whichever orientation you come from. I myself would be a little hesitant to do that. I think all it means is that he was walking with God, and all of a sudden he wasn't there, but God took him. What do you think the meaning of that is? Now we mentioned Elijah, he didn't see death. And of course the other big example in the Bible of one who didn't see death is who? Well, maybe I'm not saying it right, but it's similar to it, would be Jesus. He did see death, didn't he? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, God raised him. You see that? But resurrection is more, not just that he disappeared, like Enoch, but the resurrection is a transformation of his whole body into the new age. He's no longer bound by time and space and no longer has a old age body, but a new age body, which is everywhere at all times and all places. And so, but one thing is quite clear. I think this is perhaps the strongest thing, is that everybody else dies, isn't it? This may be the great message of this passage, ladies and gentlemen, that what is human life? It's only part of the life of humanity. Each one of us individual humans is born, lives out our lives in the family, gets old, and then what? Dies. Mm-hmm. But what about humanity? That continues, isn't it? The descendants continue.
Two survivors.
Pardon?
Two survivors.
Survivors, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, I'm not as old as some of you, but I get to that, and I'm glad I retired, because I said, out of the way for those younger people coming on, and that's the way it happens. And we look upon human life very much that way. I think one of the basic things, we put it on our tombstones, don't we? Born such and such a time. And we don't have much to put on a tombstone, much room, but you kind of reduce a human life into the vital statistics, we call it. And that's what you've got here. Did any of you notice any other differences between the pattern and what we have here? Some of you might have noticed. Yes, Adam begat a son in his own image. You see that? God had created humans in his image. But now this continues so that ever after, every human being is created how? In the image of God. And that's a glory and a gift that's given to everyone. We're not junk. Every human being is created in the image of God. So it's only a minor thing, but it's rather important, isn't it? And did you notice in verses 2, and I think it's in verse 2 itself, yes, doesn't he repeat pretty well what had been in chapter 1? God created them in his image. Created them what? Male and female. God blessed them. And called their name?
Man.
So God is the one who determines what a human being is. Can you tell me what a human being is according to a scientist? It would be, say, an anthropologist who only wants to, doesn't want to have any God talk at all. Just wants to describe the beings we call humans. Well, they got to have a bigger brain box, don't they? Otherwise, they're not quite human. So they measure your brain box, don't they, the anthropologists? They have to have what? Prehensibles? Be able to hold things? Or Aristotle would say a human being is a rational animal. It's an animal who can think like the philosopher Aristotle could think. So you're human if you think. But according to the Bible, you're human. Why? Because you are in the image of God and God has created you. You see that? And you have a history with God. That's a theological understanding of God, not a philosophical. I'm not against the philosophical, nor am I against an anthropological description of humans. I think you can measure the brain boxes and see how this creature is different than others and how Homo sapiens, ripe man, is different from what is only approaching like man-like, you see, anthropoid. I have nothing against that. But I think, Alice, you pointed out something important here, that God gives the name to this creature of human, and he determines what is human, what is not. And you notice there's no gender distinction here. We only come two different ways, two different plumbings, male and female, and they're all in the image of God. We've noticed this throughout our study, that there's no kind of a... Surely it was formulated by men, that was a man's world, but it is not confined to... it doesn't limit the humanity to only males. Not by any means. So you have it all here. I could just as, if I had enough Holy Spirit, I could rewrite this from a feminist viewpoint. But I maybe would get into trouble if I had all these women bringing forth the descendants. You see that? You could do that. Did you notice how the daughters are mentioned here? Have sons and daughters? And we notice that in chapter 4, like for instance, Adam knew his wife and she became pregnant, and she brought forth, and she gave the name to the child, Cain, and said, like the Lord, I have created a man. And she was very, very proud. So you have that, which hasn't always been noticed in the Bible, but it really is there. Is there anything else that you want to refer to? I think we've covered most of the things.
All of this comes down through the male.
Yes, in this one, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think their society, there's no doubt about it, it was male-dominated, you see that. We know that. But I don't think that it necessarily means that a human being that is female is therefore a second-class citizen, you see that. That's why I would, in the interest of emancipation of women, and I'm not particularly radical on this, I wouldn't mind saying this refers to all genders of humans. And you know that in order to beget a child, the woman is there and has to, and they so that's somewhat implied here, even though the formulation is male. Begat is a very male word. In chapter 4, we had that last time, sometimes it uses was begotten. In other words, it doesn't necessarily use the macho word begat, but was a word that you could mean for the male and the female, begotten. Just by the way, in the New Testament, when you are born of the Holy Spirit, it doesn't have to be just male, begotten of the Holy Spirit. It can also mean female, brought forth from the Holy Spirit. The word genaon, it covers both aspects of it. Anything else? Any other comments? Well, let's look at these numbers. Did any of those numbers strike you? I read it, and I kind of emphasized a little. I get my licks in as I read it. A few numbers that were extraordinary. And I don't just mean 969. Methuselah, the longest one.
There was one that was very shorter than the others.
Who? Enoch. And what's the number of Enoch? You're right on it, Ellison. 365. Does that ring a bell?
Days of the year?
Sure. The year is, and now watch it, of a solar year. You see, if you have the way the Israelites ordinarily had it, you would have a lunar year, according to the moon. But a lunar year is... eventually, when you go through 12 of them, you miss 10 days. Because a lunar month is only 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes. And if you don't reshuffle, and you don't keep it with the sun, you miss your seasons, you see that? All of a sudden you're celebrating Christmas at the 4th of July, and you haven't got your calendar right, you see that? So when they, I'm quite sure, ladies and gentlemen, that when they heard 365, you caught it, and they caught it even more, that he lived how long before he disappeared? A full sun epoch. You see that? A solid one, not one of these wobbly moon months. By the way, what happened? You will know this, that the Israelites had a Sabbath. You had 6 days and then you had the seventh, wasn't it? If you have four of them, how close do you get to a moon month? You have 28 days, don't you? How are you going to make that up? How did the Israelites in their village make that up so that they didn't celebrate the 4th of July or the Christmas at the 4th of July? Because if they hadn't made it up, they would have gotten into trouble. Well, all ancient peoples did that. The Romans did it. They had what they call intercalendary months, or days. They would put days in between. They would celebrate in Israel. We know this. They'd celebrate the new moon day for 2 days sometimes. That means you didn't have to work for 2 days. You could have, and they were happy to do that. For instance, when King Saul was suspecting his chieftain David of not being loyal, he asked, when he wasn't there at the banquet, he asked Jonathan, David's good friend, "Where is the son of Jesse?" He said, "Well, he went to Bethlehem to take part in a feast of his tribe and his clan, because he came from down there." And then the next day, Saul asked the same thing. "Where is the son of Jesse? Why isn't he here at the banquet?" And Jonathan said the same thing. And then Saul blew up. That shows you that the feast day was 2 days, you see that. We have other evidence. So they finally had, they did not have our calendar. And still they have to somehow make extra, the Jews, by the way, still have this calendar. They still have a moon calendar. And they have to follow this quite a bit. We'll talk about that a little later. So that's one thing that we should notice, that you had 3, 6, 5 for Enoch. And you notice Enoch is the 7th in this list. This list, by the way, for especially those of you who were here last time, starts here with the same as we had in this last part of the list in chapter 4, 25. Mahuyael is a variant of Mahalalel, and Irid is a variant of Jerid, but Enoch, in order to be the 7th, is here. When anything comes as 7, and the Israelites know that's what? Important, do you see that? 7 is kind of holy, and so they kind of want to put him there. But then finally, of course, you would have Methuselah is the same as Methuselah, and then here you have Lamech, and then finally you have Noah. This goes all the way through. But I'm trying to look for one more number that we had here. That you had a lot of numbers, didn't I? Did one strike out to you and just almost ring a bell like a siren going off? How about Lamech? And all the days of Lamech, this is verse 31. Thus all the days of Lamech were 777 years. Yeah, pardon?
Lots of sevens in that.
There are lots of sevens, isn't it? Where do we have sevens before? In the Bible. First part of Genesis. Most of you were not here in the earlier discussions, but you all know the Sabbath day, seventh day, isn't it? And don't you remember that Cain was protected by God? And if anybody touched his protege, the Lord would avenge it, what? Sevenfold, remember that? And in the end of chapter 4, that Lamech sang his sword song and said, I slew a young man when he was my rival in love, and he dared to touch me, I just killed him. And if Cain will be avenged by God sevenfold, Lamech will be avenged 70 and sevenfold. So, and now here's the third time that you have that 70 mentioned. You see that? So 7, 7, 7. And now I'll put on my professor's hat, and I'll say a few things that I've done from my research on this. These two numbers, 365, which I think you caught on to, and 777, are the only numbers in all the numbers that are given. I didn't put them all up here because there are too many of them. That are not multiples of 60. That is their basic number. Our basic number today is decimal system, 10. Don't we put tens and multiples of 10 in the decimal system and the point and the dot? And as I said, that perhaps goes back to this. 7 perhaps goes back to the idea that there are 7 dimensions to any object in the world. Let's say even this book has a top, and a bottom, and a front, and a back, and a right, and a left. Even Ralph Gerke has a top, if he's like a human being, stands on the ground where he should, level, as a bottom, and a right, and a left, and a back, and a front. But God is transcendent. He's not limited by any of these. Now that's not the only explanation for 7. They knew that up in the heavens there were 7 movable stars. The rest were fixed on the firmament. But the sun and the moon, and they knew of 5 planets, were 7. So 7 was important, get the idea? And so whenever you heard 7, this is extraordinary. And I suppose this guy, you've already mentioned it, that he thought that Noah was going to be important, wasn't it? And gave him that name, the comforter, the rest bringer, he lives 777. So they say, wow. But what else about sexagesimal system. If I take my number that in the our present culture, well, wait a second, our present culture is computer culture, therefore you only have what? I'm a little behind time here.
Two.
On or off, two, isn't it?
Yeah, two.
And then it goes like wildfire through all the circuits, and especially with superconductors. But before computers, wasn't it decimal? If I have 10, and I want to divide that without having any remainder, what divides into 10? How many numbers? 1, 10 times, 2, 5, and 10. So it's rather flexible, you see that? But, ladies and gentlemen, think of a 60. We all look down on ancient people. How many multiples can you divide without any remainder into 60? 1, 60 times, 2,
3,
4, can't you? Then
5,
12,
6,
10, 20,
7.
Well, we can have 15, we can have 20, and we can have 60. It's so great that we still use 360 degrees for most of our measurements because it's much nicer than the decimal system. Don't we? 360 degrees and lots of things. It's a very ancient way of doing things. So what is behind these either years or months? Ladies and gentlemen, you could take any one of these numbers except 365 and 775 and divide 5 into it, it'll come out. In fact, you could do that even with 365 and with 777. And if you have 5 months of 5 years of 12 months each, you have 60. And every one of these numbers is a multiple of 60, and once in a while it has 7. This is remarkable. To really go into detail, if any of you are interested, some of the people at the first session were interested, and you could make a copy of this, the only copy I have, of all these numbers. They are extremely flexible, and to them in their day, this was a nice thing. The great Hebrew scholar, Umberto Casuto, who's a marvelous scholar, has studied all this. He said, for modern people, what does that mean? If it has a multiple of 60, you can divide 60 into it in some way or other, and then once in a while it has 7, it means he lived a long time or even a longer time. He uses a wonderful example that I still remember when I read his book, and it was something like this. He said, Sarah, in the Bible, lives 127 years. Now, Casuto, and he's a very pious Jew who accepts everything in the Torah and the Bible, said it could be that she lived 127 years. But it could also, and he thinks that's more probable, that this is simply 260s, you see that 120, plus 7. So he said what that means in our modern way of talking is that Sarah lived a longer time than a long time. And that all these numbers are therefore are symbolic, and they're not supposed to be used the way people have used them to what? Figure out the age of the world, you see that. They are, as I will show in another pattern here, part of a whole system that is aimed at a climax. I think at the Sabbath, cosmic Sabbath. I guess the way I can do that best for you is to simply say that we don't have time to do that, but if you actually took all these serially, you see they kind of overlap here, and you took them all the way from Adam to Noah and to Noah's 600th year when the flood came, we'll talk about that Wednesday, that you would get this many years. Let's put it down here so that you can see. Everybody has noticed this, the old Martin Luther, the old St. Jerome, and all the old fathers, that's how many years you have from the first born child of Adam, Seth, until Noah at the time of the flood. Then from the time after the flood, when Noah's son Shem begets his first child, and his name is Arpaxad, all the way through here to Abram, when Abram is 75 years, you have, now watch it, this will strike you if you've been following. How many years in that second genealogy, chapter 11? 365. Wow! A full solar year. Now, if I add these two together, so this is from Adam to Noah, and now from Noah's son Shem to Abram at 75, and then I look in the book of Genesis and take all the numbers of the patriarchs while they were in the promised land, 215 years, and then you would wonder, what is that? Well, you can see that it's just half of when they were in Egypt and sojourned in Egypt, 430. 215 is just half of that. So they're using numbers as patterns to give messages across in a, what we call symbolic. If you add these up here, what do you get? 16. So until you finally have the time when the children of Israel can leave Egypt in the Exodus and go to Mount Sinai and make the covenant and have the Sabbath for the first time, you have 2,666 years. Now, I think I don't know if you can see this down below here, but I'll just read it so that you get the idea. There seems to be a symbolic periodization of the Bible's tradition about the cosmic Sabbath. I think it's all pointing like arrows to a final thing when the whole world would be whole the way God wants it to be. The cosmic Sabbath. Cosmic means the whole universe is at peace. Now, at creation, you all know that, and some of you mentioned it already here, that the seventh day was established as the ultimate reality for all creation. You can work for 6 days, but the seventh day is separated, and that's the future of all of creation, no matter what happens. That's God established. Now, before they came to Mount Sinai, you've got then these, I'll just circle it so you get to see it again, 366 years. That's the pre-Sinic era. Here's the same thing that I put up here. You can see it here. Then at Mount Sinai, at the burning bush, it started, and then later the children of Israel came there and made their covenant, Mount Sinai. For Israel, the covenant people, the Sabbath became the sign of their covenant. I think you know that the sign of the Abrahamic covenant is a rainbow. We'll have that on Wednesday when we talk about the flood. Does anybody know the sign of the Abrahamic covenant? The Noahic covenant, the covenant with Noah, is a rainbow. You remember that? There's a rainbow and it says what? This is a sign that I'm not going to destroy the world. Does anybody know the sign that Abram had and still continues in Judaism to this day, that he was the one from whom the Messiah would come? In thy seed all the nations of the earth will be blessed. The circumcision of that very member of his body by which the seed would be engendered. Circumcision. This is in chapter 17 of the book of Genesis. Does anybody know what the sign of the Sinaitic covenant is? To be a Jew, not only have to be from circumcised people, but from Abram, but you have to be what? You have to keep the Sabbath. Shabbat. You have to keep the Sabbath. And that's mentioned explicitly in the Bible and in chapter 33. It is the sign of the covenant. So that covenant was the Sabbath, the seventh day, was celebrated by the Israelites here. And this 2,666 is two-thirds of the full period. I did it like this, that if you divide each one into multiples of 6, 6, 6, and two-thirds, you have four of them here, and you have only two of them. This is two-thirds, and this is one-third. And what you're finally going up to in this pattern would be the time when all of God's promises and all of God's dealings with humans that are imperfect now will finally come to their rest and to their completion, to their wholeness. That's why I put it at the top here, that even though at creation the Sabbath had been established as the ultimate, the future reality for creation, and even though at Mount Sinai the Israelites, the chosen people, had that as the sign of their relationship with God, of their covenant, at the end, when that's all done for, creation's consummation will be realized by all creation in the cosmic Sabbath itself. So I think it's a kind of a pattern. Now, we know that ancient peoples, the Israelites, they kind of looked at their whole history as one that would have a future fulfillment. Let me give you an example. When Ezekiel was in exile, he was a prophet. He had lots of prophecies, but at the end of his whole book, chapter 40 to 48, he has the new temple, all of its dimensions, a new holy land, a whole new relationship once the worship of God is going to be reestablished, and he expects that to come in the future, and he uses numbers. Ezekiel has to lie on his left side 390 days to atone for all the sins that were committed while the temple stood. Then he has to write to lie on his right side for 40 days to atone for the sins of the people of Judah. And altogether he lies 430 years. If, for instance, the leader, Nehemiah, is going to lead the people back to build up the temple, he has to leave, not just any day, he has to leave on these festival days. So they were much more interested in a calendar and the fulfillment of numbers and patterns than we would be. There's only one place in the Bible besides what I'm talking about here that has so many numbers. Does anybody know which other part of the Bible has all kinds of these numbers, and they're very symbolic? Well, it's called the Book of Numbers. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. Does anyone know why it's called Numbers? Because they numbered the tribe. They have a census of them. And they have two of them. One, before they leave, and the other one, just before they're going to enter the Promised Land. One when they leave Mount Sinai, you see that, and the other one. And if you look at those numbers, they're all like these numbers. Even the numbers that they have of what the priests are going to give and need for the tabernacle. They're all kind of symbolic numbers. So, coming back to my original question, I said, what about the longevity of these numbers? There are people who feel that the world is just 4,000 years old. And I kind of agree that the pattern here to the bullseye would be 4,000, because that would bring us to the cosmic Sabbath, but that's a symbolic number. And I don't think I can use that to figure out the end of the world, you see that. And I think that the Jews meant it. In that sense, Bishop Usher, when he made his famous dating of all the numbers, didn't he put creation at 4,000? He put it at 4,004. Do you know why he put added 4? Because everybody knew that the monk who made our Christian calendar, Dionysius Exiguus, was off 4 years, so he added 4,004. And he put it at October, because that's the beginning of the Jewish Rosh Hashanah, New Year. So that's why he did that. Now, I think that was perhaps going too far to take those as major numbers. Some people still do that. You know what they think? Enoch was the first spaceman. And I've read such people saying this. I don't think they have any evidence for it. And they think these people lived that long. My answer to the question that people raised, that we should never take these numbers as if they were regular years like we have regular years in our experience, but these are symbolic numbers. And they are pointing toward what? A fulfillment when the cosmic Sabbath would come. We should also not take them as dates. So to take the flood, which lasted from Noah's 600th year, the second month, the 17th day, to his 601st year, the second month, the 27th day, there too we have to take their calendar and their understanding of it, quite different than just all of a sudden to translate it into our terms and try to understand what it meant. Well, I told the first class, and I should have told you that too, that this might be the most unprofitable of all the sessions we had. I taught a group of pastors in Renton, and we had a number of series, about 10 series. We had a lot of fun. And in the evaluations, the pastors said, we liked it all except that genealogy business. But I'm afraid I've kind of hooked on it. Now, we have just a minute or so. Anyone would like to ask any more questions about this? I've, I think, gotten in my legs here, maybe a little too much so. I don't know whether it's been a problem to you. Most people don't feel that they are bound to be Christian to believe that the world is 6,000 years old. I think we talk about many other things, and I think you just have to understand it was meant in a different way than the years. You have a question.
What is the year of the Jew?
Pardon?
What is the Jewish year now?
I can't hear you.
How did the Jew, what is the Jewish year now?
Oh, the Jewish year now is 5,751. Yeah. You see, they are still bound. For them, the Messiah has not yet come. You see that? Mm-hmm. Well, it's something like when we have a church calendar. You see that? That's different than our regular calendar, isn't it? And we say Christ was born today. Well, we know that's not particular exact anniversary, or Christ died, or he rose, and it comes according to the first full moon in spring, isn't it? We know that, and we pretty well understand that for our liturgical celebration, we're not having the exact anniversary. We pretty well know that. They did that too, and they do that too. So they would never be hung up on this, that they would say that the world was 5,000 and, what did I have here, 753 years. And I suppose now it would be coming, starting, they just had their Rosh Hashanah, the New Year's Day, they have to have a new year. But they would do that.
Why would their calendar have been a couple hundred years different than Bishop Usher's?
Simply because they take other things in consideration from their tradition. Part of it is that they have to work with a lunar calendar, you see that? And because they have to work with a lunar calendar, and that's the official one, and they still have to kind of put in these intercalendary days, they have more problems with that, you see that? So they've got more years, lunar years, than we have solar years. Yeah, I guess that's a shorthand in saying it. I have an article here from Israel Scene, which kind of tells you how they did that in that intertestament period during the time of the Talmud and those rabbis. That's not in our Christian Bible, you see that in our Old Testament. But for them, that's still kind of important tradition, so they'll keep that up. If you want to look at a Jewish encyclopedia or something like that, just look underneath the calendar, and it'll give you all the details there. For this class, most of the, I think John Gibson, and this is the last thing I want to say today, if you still have questions, we may do that too. John Gibson has only a page on this. And he kind of says, Umberto Cossutto is right, and he says, if you want to go any farther on this, it's very close to what I finally came up with. He says that in chapter 5, you have a more carefully composed variant in expansion of what you had in chapter 4. He spends a good share of his time on that. And so he says, these first men enjoyed huge lifespans. And I suppose if you take it the way he does in Cossutto, they lived a very long time, and even a longer time than a very long time. Then we'll notice, we won't study that. It's just too much to do that. This will be the last time I'm a genealogy. These numbers are much less, and gradually come down to ages that we have of the patriarchs who lived longer than we do, but even that could be somewhat symbolic. And then finally come back to, what does the Bible say is ordinary life, Psalm 90? The days of our years are 80. What does that mean? 70. And if by reason of strength they be, what? 80. Then there's still sorrow and trouble. So that's the way the Bible did it. Well, have you been edified by all of the numbers? Or have you been confused and have dropped out? You want to have any comment back there?
No.
No? Okay.
Aren't they shorter after the flood? Aren't the years shorter after the flood?
Yes. In other words, the patriarchs in this second genealogy after the flood, they're much shorter, getting closer to what I said we have, 70 and 80.
Right.
Not quite yet. We'll have to go through Abram and so forth. But I believe that even there, Umberto Cossutto is very careful, and he knows his Jewish tradition with much better than I would, especially in numbers. There is one other French writer whom I studied. His name is Barnouin. He was a Dominican father in Vietnam, and I haven't heard of him. Maybe he got lost in the war, got killed. He hasn't published anything since. But he published on the numbers in the Book of Numbers, and also on these numbers here. And he has a lot of learned reasons for all the numbers. So it's still, I've only given you kind of the tip of the iceberg, if you really want to get to each one of these numbers to see that. But I think we've gone to the main things, and that's all I did. Tomorrow we'll have even a worse story. The sons of the gods saw the daughters of men that they were fair and went into them and brought forth what? Giants. What should love-smitten supernatural beings do with women? It's only 4 verses, but I'm quite sure we'll spend a high old time with that. And then if we have any time, we'll get started on the flood, because we want to do the flood all in one section. You see that in one session on Wednesday. So I don't know if all of you will be able to be here, but that's the plan.
Thank you, Ralph.
There are copies of this in the bookstore if anybody wants some good reading. Gibson on Genesis. Sir, I'd like to get to know you.
Harry's office.
Yes, Concordia Teachers College.
Student from there in the summer, and he's working the summer in Yosemite National Park. What are the Christian ministries?
Yeah. I can't think of what it is.
Not much.
Maybe I'll wake up. Yeah, I feel partly asleep.
Oh, good night.
But I feel better than I did yesterday.
Oh, somebody's gonna need to get some more session.
I was out like, I sleep 2 hours.
I was so tired, I slept like.
The 200. The 215 again was what?
Yeah, just. Of 430.
Yeah.
And those are symbolic numbers.
The years they're wandering in the wilderness.
This is when they are slaves in Egypt, 430 years, soldiering in Egypt. Well, they were wandering the wilderness 40 years. So this is 430, see that? And if you want me to break that down, I can do that. It's 490 plus 40, it's exactly what you have in Ezekiel chapter 4, that Ezekiel lay on one side to get the atonement of the northern tribes for 390 days. They were really bad. And then he still had to lie on his other side 40 years for the tribe of Judah, and to get rid of all the sins that had been committed when the temple was standing. Can you imagine that? So that's kind of the way they kind of thought of things, you see that? And we don't think of things like that, but it's kind of the way they